From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We need a good book this summer, maybe a stack of them. Choosing, finding can be hard. We've got suggestions for you. This hour, On Point, Great Summer Reads 2017. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What are you looking for in a page-turner this summer? Thrills? Escape? Mercy? What have you found? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us today from New York to look out on the books that we might read this summer, Liesl Schillinger, book critic for the New York Times Book Review. She was at the New Yorker for a long time. Welcome back to the show, Liesl. Great to have you here in the summer of 2017.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Also with us from San Francisco is Elizabeth Curry Chandler, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Goodreads, the big website where you can curate book lists and write reviews and share suggestions. Elizabeth Curry Chandler, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. With us from Athens, Georgia, Janet Geddes, owner of the Avid Bookshop, has two locations in Athens. Avid was named a finalist for Publishers Weekly's 2017 Bookstore of the Year Award. Janet Geddes, congratulations, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So you've all given us a list of 10 great reads for the summer. We've got those up at our website, onpointradio.org. We want to talk through as many as we can in this hour because, you know, people are right now maybe packing for the 4th of July weekend and thinking, what would be good to throw in here? I wonder, and Janet, you must see this because people come in and out of the store all the time. Do you see the different sort of moods or appetites in different years and seasons for different kinds of books? Can you spot a particular kind of need or hunger this summer?
Definitely. People's reading patterns change season by season. I think in this current political climate, we have a lot of our readers who ordinarily would have read a little heavier literary fiction are looking for escape more than they have before. Also, when it comes to summer reads, people often want a paperback. It's a little less expensive and they're a little less invested if it gets sandy or wet when they're at the beach or the pool. Mm-hmm. And people are also just looking for a story that is going to whisk them away and engage them from the very first chapter.
Elizabeth, in San Francisco, you've got, I don't know, thousands, millions, whatever you've got at Goodreads. Do you see trends in what people are recommending, picking, putting up on the site?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a few years ago, we noticed that mermaid books were becoming hot. And then there was a period of time where the word girls was in every title of all the books being published. We definitely see trends.
What is a mermaid book?
I think it had something to do with YA. There was a zombies period. There was a I don't remember, like a paranormal romance type period. Steampunk has kind of whisked through the site. And then at one point there was a bunch of YA books about mermaids.
Okay. I don't know if that'll make my list, but okay. Liesl, do you have a particular kind of itch that needs scratching this summer when it comes to the category or continent of books that are drawing your attention?
Well, I have to say that given the current political climate, I've been really looking for books that expand the idea of empathy, whether that's understanding the mindset of people in another culture, or whether it's people in another time at a difficult moment, or whether it's people whose family constellations are unusual, distinct, or different from ours in some way. But I'm also looking for escape and fun, so I've got kind of a light and heavy mix.
Take us to your list then. Right at the top, you've got a book that we talked about with its author on this show, Lincoln in the Bardo. Very unusual book. Really something unique. Describe it to us for folks who might have missed that show, Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders.
This book is just astonishing. And for me, as a passionate reader, but also a person who reads a whole lot, what I loved is this book set me a new task, which was to kind of put its pieces together myself. It's a really moving story about the moment when Abraham Lincoln was grieving the death of his favorite son, Willie, who was 11, died of typhus. Mm-hmm. But this was early into the Civil War. It was in 1862. And Willie died the week of the first really terrible battle of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. About 3,000 people wounded and killed, perhaps more. Fort Donelson, I I'm not really a historian, but the president was so shocked by the loss of this boy that it was reported in the papers of the day that he went to the crypt where the boy was entombed at Oak Hill Cemetery and brought out his son's body and held it. And when George Saunders heard about that, he was just transfixed. And, you know, you can all picture the Lincoln Monument, Lincoln yes. sitting white mm-hmm. marble on that chair.
Yeah.
And he, when he heard that story, he thought of the Pietà.
Mm-hmm.
And
Mary
so he wanted
holding Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So he wanted to write a story that would bring alive the pathos of that moment. And in the book, what you've got is the cemetery is filled with shades, like in a Tibetan Buddhist thing that's mm-hmm. called the bardo. Think
spirits,
of it as limbo.
Ghosts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these people are so colorful, and they don't realize they're dead. And seeing a living man come and embrace his son, who is of the dead, just sends them into a flurry. They all think maybe they'll come alive again.
Mm-hmm.
So the book is both, it's a play in which those characters who talk like crazy kids, crazy people out of Mark Twain, out of mm-hmm. Huckleberry Finn,
mm-hmm.
are interacting with the shade of this boy and observing everything. So it's that play. And then in between that are chapters of chronicle from the actual era, some real, some invented by George Saunders. But so you put together the theatrical and the journalistic historic moment and see how a president's empathy expanded from his own family to our entire nation.
We talked with George Saunders about the book in March, and he read for us a little from the book. This is where the lanky, shambling, grieving president in the middle of the night has come to the cemetery in Washington. He goes to Willie's tomb to hold Willie's body as Willie's shade or ghost sort of watches and tries to get his father's attention. But here's George Saunders reading from Lincoln in the Bardo about the man, i.e. President Abraham Lincoln, leaning into the coffin of his own son.
The man bent, lifted the tiny form from the box, and with surprising grace for one so ill-made, sat all at once on the floor, gathering it into his lap. Sinking his head into the place between chin and neck, the gentleman sobbed, raggedly at first, then unreservedly, giving full vent to his emotions.
The President of the United States grieving the loss of his son, holding the body of his son. Where did it take you in terms of that study of empathy, Liesl?
Well, I was just terribly moved at the empathy it made you feel, not only for Lincoln's son, but for the desperation of the shades to have their own selves acknowledged by the boy, the desire of every human to be acknowledged for their distinct problems, their needs, the good things they did. And so I guess it just showed the human weaknesses of all of us and the power that we have on each other. And it was certainly moving to see the transfer of his grief just to the soldiers. You sort of understood that he was the father of the nation. And I thought that was just so powerful.
Lincoln in the Bardo by George Saunders, a very unusual book that goes to some very unusual and, yes, places that challenge and invoke empathy. Janet Geddes, top of your list, The Leavers by Lisa Coe. Leavers as in those who go. Tell us about it.
This is an exquisite novel. I was on a plane when I finished reading it, and I remember looking up around me and realizing that I had occupied this completely different world, and no one else around me understood where I had just been. It's a beautifully astonishing book. Yeah, I wanted to hand it to everybody I knew right then and there. I think speaking to what Liesl mentioned about wanting to empathize with characters and to provide customers and readers with experiences that allow them to step into other walks of life and understand what it's like to live a life other than their own. Lisa Coe's novel is perfect for that.
What's the story?
So the main character is a boy named Deming. You find out in the first chapter that one day his mother, who is from China, just doesn't come home.
An immigrant to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So his mother has immigrated with him to New York. They live together in a very small apartment. She works very long hours trying to make ends meet.
In a nail salon. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And one day she's gone. And Deming has to reconcile how to continue living without her. He doesn't know where she's gone, why she's gone, if she's abandoned him purposely. So he's left with this questioning and ends up living more in this white middle class existence.
I mean, he's
outside
headed over to a new
city.
Family, right? The suburban
exactly.
college teachers who take him in, give him a new name, Daniel.
Yes, they rename him. So he's stuck between these two worlds of no longer being in touch with his mother and his family of origin and his country of origin, but at the same time struggling to belong to this new upper middle class white family. But he never really belongs in either world. The story that eventually is revealed of what has happened to Deming's mother is heartrending and sobering and so beautifully written. Just her experiences, what has happened to her that has taken her away from the son that she loves so much, is based on tremendous research that Lisa Koh conducted. So it is really astonishing for me to have come from a privileged background to read about this and realize that this isn't a world of fiction, like the world that Lisa Koh described.
The price people pay to be as immigrants sometimes.
Exactly. But I just highly recommend it. All that being said, I don't want people to think it's a depressing book. It's definitely uplifting. It speaks to the indefatigable human spirit and just the power of family and belonging. But I really think, especially with all the immigration laws and statutes being passed, it's an extremely important and timely read for people.
The Leavers by Lisa Koh, K-O, and it sounds like another prompt to empathy, the theme of our first bit of conversation here, unless I misread you, Janet.
I think you're exactly right with that.
There's two, Lincoln in the Bardo, The Leavers by Lisa Koh. Janet Geddes, Elizabeth Curry Chandler, and Liesl Schillinger are with us. We're talking about fine summer reads for 2017. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Summer Reads. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about fine summer reads for 2017, books for the beach and the back porch this summer, with Elizabeth Curry Chandler. She's co-founder, editor-in-chief of Goodreads, with us from San Francisco. Janet Geddes, owner of the Avid Bookshop, a couple of locations in Athens, Georgia, finalist for the Publishers Weekly 2017 Bookstore of the Year Award. And Liesl Schillinger is with us, book critic for the New York Times Book Review. You can check out their top 10 lists at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us this hour. What are you most looking forward to reading this summer? What do you need? And what's your strategy for summer reading? Whatever somebody left at the beach house, or one classic and then a guilty pleasure? How do you mix it up? What's most important to you, and maybe most important this summer? I want to go right to the top of your list, Elizabeth Curry Chandler at Goodreads, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Tell us about it.
Well, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo is about a very famous movie star who rose to the top from very humble beginnings in Hell's Kitchen. And she's known for her sort of sexy, salacious roles and her meteoric rise to the top and her seven husbands. And at the end of her life, she reaches out to a magazine and asks if this young upstart journalist will come and interview her and tell her story. And the story, as the book goes, you're trying to figure out why this young journalist is there. She's questioning it. And the woman really wants to tell her truth, because as you go through the book, you realize that, the pictures that have been painted in the tabloids is nothing like the actual life of this woman, who's a really kind of interesting character. The movie star is pretty dark, and what she's done to get to the top is not always pretty.
Get a ride to Hollywood, she trades her virginity for a ride.
Yes, exactly. And
goes with her bombshell figure, hides her Cuban roots, dyes her hair blonde. Hey, it's Hollywood, and off she goes. And she comes out pretty hardened by this.
Yes, and you know, she uses sex in a very interesting way, and she doesn't have a lot of regrets, but she also really wants to tell her true story. And as you read it, a lot of things unravel. I don't want to give away some of the key premises, but it's a really clever book, because the way the pieces all fit together, by the end of the book, it all sorts of sort of makes sense. And it's really cool to see how fame and what people are reading in the papers is absolutely nothing like what is going on behind the scenes.
It's not a metaphor. She's really talking about her seven husbands. Could you read a little bit for us from The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo? She's talking here with the reporter who sent out to hear her story.
Okay, here it is. Okay, so yeah, she's speaking. Evelyn is speaking to the reporter, and she says, "Nobody deserves anything," Evelyn says. "It's simply a matter of who's willing to go and take it for themselves. And you, Monique, are a person who has proven to be willing to go out there and take what you want. So be honest about that. No one is just a victim of a victor. Everyone is somewhere in between. People who go around casting themselves as one or the other are not only kidding themselves, but they're also painfully unoriginal. I get up from the table and walk to the sink. I wash my hands because I hate how clammy they feel. I dry them. I look at her. I hate you, you know." Evelyn nods. "Good for you. It's such an uncomplicated feeling, isn't it? Hatred?"
Ooh, great. At the end of a long life, that's how she feels. She's asked if it bothers her that all anyone talks about when they talk about you are the seven husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And she says, "No, because they're just the husbands. I am Evelyn Hugo," there by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Callers for the three of you. We're looking for great summer reads. Jen's calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Jen. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a question. I've been looking for a book recommendation for this summer. I was inspired years ago reading the memoir Wild by Cheryl Strayed, and so I was looking for my own challenge. I'll be riding my bike from Buffalo to Albany next week.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking for a book I can take with me, kind of like Wild, either a memoir about someone who does something, you know, challenging, or a novel, you know, pushing yourself, doing something you didn't think you can do.
Okay, we've got the right panel to look at that. Janet Geddes, Jen's hitting the road from Buffalo to Albany, and she liked Wild, Cheryl Strayed's book from the Pacific Crest Trail. Doesn't have to be exactly the same, but she's off on adventure. What do you say?
So I have a few recommendations right off the bat. One, I would ask you, Jen, have you read Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed?
I have not.
That is a tremendous work. It's a collection of advice columns that she wrote, but I love reading letters and columns and essays and short stories when I'm traveling, because you can just pick one up and read one per day. That is beautiful, and if you love her writing, you'll love that, and it speaks a lot to her adventures. So it's sort of like mini autobiographies in some ways. There's also a graphic novel that is by an Athens creator, actually, who illustrates for the New York Times, among other people, on other locations. It is called You and a Bike and a Road. It's by Eleanor Davis.
Sounds perfect
you might really
for Jen.
Enjoy that. Exactly. And also, there's another book on my top 10 list that's listed on the On Point website called The Rules Do Not Apply. It's by Ariel Levy. And you find out in the very first opening of this really hard hitting memoir that the person writing the book, she says, you know, I had a spouse, and I was X months pregnant with my first child, and a year from then, none of that was true. So it's a really beautiful, difficult to read, but wonderfully written book about love and loss and struggle and someone's emotional and traveling journey. I think you would really love that, too.
Liesl Schillinger, what are you thinking about if someone's looking for it? It might not be a hike or a road trip, but maybe that. But there's also a spiritual journey there. I don't know. Maybe, what comes to mind for Jen?
Almost too many to mention. I did just review 10 travel books, so they're on my mind.
Okay.
One of them that might amuse her, and I hope I get the title right. I'm afraid I don't remember the author, but it's called Writing the Iron Curtain, something like that. This man...
Riding.
Okay. He got an old East German cruddy bike, this heavy thing with only one gear, and decided to ride it down the old Iron Curtain bike trail. Actually, it's a new trail that follows the borders of the old Iron Curtain. It's very funny. He has every misadventure in the world. He started in March not realizing it would still be winter up in Finland. And so he's riding his bike through the ice and then goes to Russia where the potholes nearly knock him flat. And then he finally ends up on the Black Sea, but it's a very funny misadventure. And I'm sorry that I can't remember the title correctly, but it was in the Times. The other that I thought she might like is Elif Batuman has written her first novel. She wrote a very good memoir called The Possessed, which was very funny a few years ago about her obsession with Russian literature. But in her new novel, The Idiot, it's about a girl who's clueless, Turkish-American, who arrives at Harvard. And you see her sort of groping with email and trying to be as cool as her sophisticated friends. And she ends up going to some blighted place in Eastern Europe and scrambling to invent herself and to teach to the children. And so that's a bit of a travel story and a memoir, even though it's a novel that might appeal to her. And then the other one is a bit of a stretch, but I was so interested in this this book called Bears in the Street, which is a book by a woman named Lisa Dickey, who went to Russia in 1995, 2005, and 2015, and traveled from Leningrad to Vladivostok and met the same people in about 10, 12 cities, I can't remember how many, but she revisits them to see how their lives have changed, first under Yeltsin, then under Putin. And so you have this vibrant tapestry of the changing Russia brought to life. And it's a good moment for that to get a picture, to get a pulse taking on the Russian people right now.
Yeah. Jen, there's a pretty great start for you. And by the way, the first one is The Cyclist Who Went Out in the Cold, Adventures Riding the Iron Curtain by Tim Moore, M-O-O-R-E. Elizabeth Curry Chandler in San Francisco. I mean, Jen can't be alone in looking for that kind of road trip, external, internal, spiritual journey book this summer. Anything that comes to mind for you?
Well, it's more of an internal journey, mm-hmm. but one book that I really loved that came out in May is Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. And why I think it's relevant is because it's really about somebody coming out of their shell, and she's developing and growing throughout the book. And I think if you're on a long ride, to have that sort of forward progression as you're reading this book would be appropriately inspirational. It's by a Scottish debut author. It's been going crazy on Goodreads. About 44,000 people have said they want to read it. And it's laugh out loud funny. It's about a young girl she's 30, and she's really socially awkward and repressed and almost logical to a fault. And she lives this very sad, lonely life in Glasgow. And then she meets this IT guy at her work, and slowly she kind of comes out of her shell. At the same time, she has this teenage crush on a musician, and that forces her to go get her nails done and cut her hair for the first time in her life. And it's one of these amazing books it's really beautiful because, you know, at moments you're laughing out loud, and then at other moments you almost want to cry because it's so poignant. And it's set in a very simple location, and It's really pretty brilliant, I think, for especially for a debut author. And I just know people on the site have been going crazy for it. And I also really, really enjoyed it.
Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. Jen, there's a more than you can carry on your bike from Buffalo to Albany. Liesl, will take us on down your list. Number two, Exit West by Mohsin Hamid. Tell us about it.
Mohsin Hamid is... he's just got such a standout voice. People may have read his book, The Reluctant Fundamentalist, or How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia.
Yeah.
But this new one, Exit West, it's almost, it's got a magical element to it, but it reads like a straight novel. And at first you think it's going to be about a couple who are just falling in love in an unnamed city in the Middle East. But it's an allegory because their town gets overtaken by civil war.
This is Saeed and Nadia, and they are running away after Saeed's mom is killed by a stray bullet. So it's too,
right.
The news is there, the headlines.
Well, sure. And but, you know, you see things like the windows. Like, usually in a city, you want to have an apartment with lots of windows. But in wartime, the window is where the bullets come in. So you see how their lives are turned on end. And when the government shuts off the cell phone and Wi-Fi, you think, well, gee, how would I cope if that happened here? So it shows that this predicament could happen to anyone. But, yeah, the section I think that I wanted to single out is when they have paid some fixer who they think maybe have just cheated them to go through one of these Narnia-like doors that will get them out of where they are to someplace safe. And it's just such a powerful metaphor because, of course, you can't get there. If people are shooting in your neighborhood, how do you even get across the street, much less out of the country? So he just makes it so alive. But you also see that, you know, the woman Nadia, when you meet her, she's in an abaya, one of those kind of cloaks that cover you head to toe. But she rides a motorcycle. And when she meets Saeed, he says, well, if you're so unconventional, why are you wearing an abaya? And I'm going to paraphrase. But she says, so men don't mess with me. And so, you know, she's and then when she wants to see him, she throws a second abaya out the window so he can sneak into her apartment looking like a woman for any all anyone knows. So it's got but you see how their journey of their refugee journey changes their relationship to each other and to all the other people they meet like themselves. And, you know, just like, yes,
that's Exit West by Mohsin Hamid. And of course, they join that flow of migrants looking to travel to safer havens. End up in a crowded camp on the Greek island of Mykonos. Do you have a little bit you could read from Exit West, Liesl?
Yes. It goes, in this group, everyone was foreign, and so, in a sense, no one was. Nadia and Saeed quickly located a cluster of fellow countrywomen and men and learned that they were on the Greek island of Mykonos, a great draw for tourists in the summer, and, it seemed, a great draw for migrants this winter, and that the doors out, which is to say, the doors to richer destinations, were heavily guarded, but the doors in, the doors from poorer places, were mostly left unsecured, perhaps in the hope that people would go back to where they came from, although almost no one ever did. Or perhaps because there were simply too many doors from too many poorer places to guard them all.
It's an allegory here, and give us a heads up as to what the allegory is.
Well, the allegory is that basically, well, there's a book called Birds Without Wings, that humans cannot fly. We cannot escape the geopolitical situations that circumstance can put us in. And so, you know, just as in the Chronicles of Narnia, like I mentioned earlier, he has developed a fantasy of escape that allows them to get away from this world of danger and powerlessness they're in. But you know, you see them on their journeys, but wherever they go, you see other people who might emerge from a sleeping woman's bedroom closet. You know, you don't know where that door is going to be. But it's just to, I guess, show the unreality of the situation people can be trapped in when war overwhelms them.
Janet Geddes in Athens, Georgia, are you finding people coming through your doors there, magic doors or not, who are looking for allegory based on refugee stories this summer or looking for fantasy that takes them further afield? I mean, you're in Athens, Georgia. I don't know. Maybe Jimmy Carter comes into your store looking for a book.
What if only. He's a few hours away. We would love to have him if you're listening,
okay.
Jimmy.
Okay.
We have a really good mix of customers, and I have actually been surprised at the number of people who I know I mentioned earlier that people are looking for escape, and that always happens. But we have a lot of people who have gotten very serious about what's happening in our country right now and in the world, and they are actively seeking books that help them understand how people relate to each other, how countries relate to each other, how politics plays into that. So while I can't think of any allegories in particular people are seeking, we are selling a lot of fiction and nonfiction that deals with political changes and refugees and all sorts of turmoil like that.
Exit West from Mohsin Hamid on Liesl Schillinger's list puts you both kind of in the flow of headlines and in the realm of allegory about the human condition. We are talking about great summer reads for this summer, 2017. You can join us. What are you most looking forward to reading this summer? This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. As we head into the 4th of July weekend, we're talking about fine summer reads, 2017, books for the beach, and The Back Porch this summer with Liesl Schillinger, book critic for the New York Times Book Review. Janet Geddes is with us from Athens, Georgia, owner of the Avid Bookshop there. Elizabeth Curry Chandler is with us, co-founder, editor-in-chief of Goodreads, the website. You can join us this hour. What are you most looking forward to reading this summer? What do you need? And how do you read now? Book on tape in the car? Kindle at the beach? Are you buying local or clicking Amazon Prime? Sorry, Janet. Will a drone bring you a book on the beach one day? What are you searching for? And do you have time anymore with all that tweeting and Facebooking and all the rest? Julie writes to us on Facebook, not enough time. Sometimes I wish I could sprout a second brain or something so I can read more. Well, you've got one. It's summertime. If not now, when? Janet, you've got not too far down your list of 10. And by the way, all of the top 10 from each of our guests is at our website, onpointradio.org. You've got one from Ann Patchett called Commonwealth. Can you tell us about it, Janet?
Sure. So one perk of owning a bookstore that a lot of people don't know about is that we get copies of books well before they're ever published for the public. So you'll have to forgive me. I'm a little spotty on these details because I read this book a while ago because I'm very spoiled. But Commonwealth is what Ann Patchett, who also owns a bookstore, I might add, in Nashville, she calls it probably one of her most autobiographical novels. So she draws a lot from her life. It involves...
It's a christening party, and somebody shows up with gin.
Yes, it starts with a christening. Exactly, yes. And that's probably the opening of the book is one of my favorite parts of it. But she does an amazing thing where you start out reading the book thinking that maybe it's going to be lighter so-called women's fiction. And what she does is unpeel and unpeel the layers of the story until when you're about halfway through, you realize you're in the midst of this masterful exploration of family and relationships and love and what that means to be a family. She's just an extraordinary writer, and I highly recommend this. It just came out in paperback in May, so it's great to take to the beach or to the pool or to read in bed at night.
Perfect for summer. Would you read a little bit for us from Ann Patchett's Commonwealth?
Sure. The christening party took a turn when Albert Cousins arrived with gin. Fix was smiling when he opened the door, and he kept smiling as he struggled to make the connection. It was Albert Cousins from the district attorney's office standing on the cement slab of his front porch. He'd opened the door 20 times in the last half hour, to neighbors and friends and people from church and Beverly's sister and all his brothers and their parents and practically an entire precinct worth of cops, but Cousins was the only surprise. Fix had asked his wife 2 weeks ago why she thought they had to invite every single person they knew in the world to a christening party, and she'd asked him if he wanted to look over the guest list and tell her who to cut. He hadn't looked at the list, but if she were standing at the door now, he would have pointed straight ahead and said, "Him." Not that he disliked Albert Cousins. He didn't know him other than to put his name together with his face, but not knowing him was the reason not to invite him. Fix had thought maybe Cousins had come to his house to talk to him about a case. Nothing like that had ever happened before, but what else was the explanation? Guests were milling around in the front yard, and whether they were coming late or leaving early or just taking refuge outside because the house was packed beyond what any fire marshal would allow, Fix couldn't say. What he was sure of was that Cousins was there uninvited, alone with a bottle and a bag.
Great. And there we go. The exploration of family. And you can just see the setup there, how far that could go. That is Commonwealth by Ann Patchett. Caitlin's calling from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Caitlin, what's your summer strategy?
Hi, Tom. Well, being a teacher and a graduate student, I don't have a lot of time to read during the school year. But I have a gigantic stack of books, and I usually buy like used books from McKay's. But one book that I really was surprised by this summer is actually a kind of a blast from the past. It's called Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi.
The graphic novel from a ways back.
Yes, it is from a ways back. But it was so good, I hadn't had the chance to read it. It's a graphic novel, which I don't usually read. But it really invokes empathy, in my opinion, and shed light from a personal viewpoint about the Islamic revolution in Iran. So it was very interesting and really moved me, and I like it. And I'm going to have to read the second one now.
A teacher and a grad student, how do you decide whether to go with a graphic novel or straight-up literature, Caitlin? Unillustrated.
Usually I go with straight-up literature, but I'm trying to branch out and be more diverse in my reading.
I love it. Caitlin in Tennessee, thanks for your call. Ed in Atlanta, Georgia. Ed, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I want to talk about and ask if any of your guests has read Crazy, the Michael Tisserand biography of George Harriman, who created Crazy Cat.
It's Crazy with a K.
Crazy with a K. And so this is Crazy Cat. This is from early in the history of American comics. William Randolph Hearst was a huge fan, essentially gave George Harriman a blank check to create it because Hearst loved the strip so much. And it ran for 20-some-odd years.
But there's a race factor here. Remind us of that, Ed.
For all that time, it was not known that George Harriman was born mulatto in New Orleans and wore a hat indoors all the time to conceal his kinky head of hair. His coworkers thought he was white at that time. No black man would have been employed by a Hearst newspaper in that role. And Crazy Cat itself, this is the reason that Calvin and Hobbes is not the great American comic strip. It's because Crazy Cat is about race and passing. Crazy Cat is about a black cat in love with a white mouse.
Yeah.
The white mouse, in response constantly to the cat's, you know, confessions of love, hits the black cat in the back of the head with a brick.
Thanks a lot, white mouse. Was it the story of his life or the revelations about race that most grabbed you, Ed?
I'm still reading it, and it's. I grew up Creole in Mobile, Alabama, so it's also very personal in that way to me as well. In that I'm learning things about Creole culture, right? The different kinds of passing. I was reading it on a MARTA bus here in Atlanta, and a guy from New Orleans happened to ask me what I was reading, and when I told him, he said. I talked about passing, as the book describes, and he says, oh, passé blanc? And I said, yes! And there's two different kinds of passing that go on. There's, like, active passing and passive passing, if you will, that the book describes. I can't remember the name for the other form. I can't remember which is which. But, you know, one lets you, you know, you're not actively telling people you're white.
You're just floating through.
Complexion and you know, my mother, who was very fair skinned, taught public school for decades. I'm sure black students of hers thought she was probably a white woman. She looked like Susan Sarandon when she was young. My mother was not white.
Yeah.
My mother grew up in Jim Crow, Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry, but I love the way you bring the nuance of it to us, and I just imagine people getting ready to click into Crazy by Michael Tisserand. The story of cartoonist George Harriman. Forgive me, Ed, but I love that you've raised it, and we've got it right there in front of us now. I want to keep trying to bang through these lists just a little bit more. We're only down to number two on your list, Elizabeth Curry Chandler. You've got Ed, thank you very much, in Atlanta. Elizabeth, The Hate You Give, and you just spelled with a capital U there by Angie Thomas. What is it?
It's a really special book. As you know, co-founder and editor, I've never seen so many people add this book to their site as either read, want to read, or currently reading. 108,000 people have said they want to or have read this book. Its average rating is actually 4.65 stars on Goodreads, which is almost unheard of.
What's
so
the story?
Statistics behind it. It's about a woman named Star who is black and lives in a poor neighborhood while she attends school at a fancy prep school in a suburb. And she's in her home neighborhood with a childhood friend who's black, and they are driving home from a party, and they get pulled over by a cop, and her friend Khalil gets out of the car and is shot. By a white officer.
I'm back in the headlines
and
again.
She struggles to decide if she should speak up about the situation and what the consequences of that is. And it's actually a young adult book. So the tone is really, really easy. It's easy to read. And it's a completely masterful book because nothing is simple in it. You know, the main character's uncle is a black cop. Her boyfriend is white from her fancy prep school. Mm-hmm. She lives in a very challenging neighborhood. And so you see the whole situation from all these different perspectives. And it's not preachy. It's totally relatable. One of our readers said, you know, there are books that are important and timely, worthy of reading because of the social or political message they send. They need to exist. And then there are other books that are well-written, emotionally charged, and unputdownable. Books that are important as that are just really good. And this book is one of those rare, wonderful creatures that is both important and really good.
The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas, teenage black girl trying to reconcile what she knows to be true about the lives of those around her with the way those lives are depicted and undervalued by society at large. We're looking at great reads for the summer of 2017. The Hate You Give might be on your list. Danielle in Kettering, Ohio. Danielle, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. My husband and I realized back in the fall that we were reading books by really white authors, and we're looking for recommendations from your guests for recent or seminal pieces from authors of color, whether historical or nonfiction pieces.
Well, great. I mean, we've got a bunch for you that we've already heard about here. Angie Thomas right there with The Hate U Give, Lisa Coe with The Leavers, and more on these lists. Liesl Schillinger, you've got a couple very high on your list of Mohsin Hamid, another Exit West, talking about people from different racial and ethnic backgrounds. You've got Chemistry and Ministry of Utmost Happiness, Arundhati Roy's book.
Many of my books are from people of color. One thing that's worth mentioning is a debut author, Zinzi Clemens. Her father is white and American. Her mother is South African or was South African. And she's written a debut novel called What We Lose that's so fascinating and moving. And it's about her narrator's issues with her, well, she calls herself colored because of her South African heritage, but she admits that she's terrified of South Africa when she goes there. And then her mother in America tells her that darker-skinned black women will always diss her and give her trouble. So it's a fascinating novel that takes on identity and race, and the woman also has an unexpected pregnancy. So that's really a fertile book. Another one that I love is Sherman Alexie's memoir, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, which is about, you know, he grew up on an Indian reservation in Spokane, and there's this wonderful sentence. His mother in it is dying, but the book is not maudlin. It's emotional, but his writing is just so smooth and superb that he makes it just fascinating and fun. Like he says, his father was a failure, but the worst was that he was a brilliant boy, a star athlete, a jitterbug dance champion who then died of alcoholism. So there's this full-rounded personality in it. Arundhati Roy's book, The Ministry of Utmost Happiness, is so long awaited. You know, she got the Booker for her first novel 20 years ago, The God of All Things. And this new one is just a paean to social justice. It's about a hijra, which is a kind of India-Pakistan subcontinental term for people of kind of indefinable gender who choose a female identity. But the book is about making people feel connection of all castes and genders and races. And it's set in a cemetery where this outcast woman creates a kind of refuge for other outcasts like herself, but it becomes a paradise. It's called the Janet Guest House, and Janet means paradise in Urdu and in Hindi. But as you know, my one of my top three is a debut novel that I'm just delighted by, and it's fun. It's funny, but it's also wise and so distinct, by Weike Wang, who's I think she was born in China but came to America very young, and it's called Chemistry, and it's about this woman who's a grad student at an unnamed Boston university in chemistry, but she's kind of losing her vocation for chemistry. And at the same time, she doesn't want to marry her boyfriend, even though when she makes a pro and con list, she only has pros. you know, there's nothing but, so she's just in this lost state, but she's so particular in her speech. And one of her biggest problems is that her parents pushed her so much and are just so judgmental. And so you learn a lot about the Chinese American experience, or maybe just her experience. But it's just the mother is sort of so spiky and insulting all of the time, and it's quite hilarious. And I found it so original.
Chemistry by Weike Wang, a mix of science and Chinese proverbs and American movie references. One more quick call here from Athens, Georgia, your backyard, Janet. Hester, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's your recommendation?
Well, as a reader and an avid bookstore customer in Athens, Georgia, I suggest A Gentleman in Moscow for an absolutely wonderful novel by Amor Tolles. With an unlikely premise, it's the story of a Russian count who was ordered to spend the rest of his life in a hotel in Moscow at the beginning of the Bolshevik Revolution. And P.S., avid bookstore is one of the best things to have ever happened in Athens.
Go Athens!
Oh,
go bookstore!
Thank you.
A Gentleman in Moscow, Amor Tolles. Janet, do you know it?
I do know it, and my rep at the publishing company has been trying to get me to read it forever, and Hester and lots of other customers are telling me that I need to go ahead and do it. So I have a copy at home, haven't opened it yet, but I did really love Amor Tolles' first novel, Rules of Civility, and I'm told that I love this even more. So I will read it, Hester, I promise.
Hester, you're good to make the recommendation. In the Bolshevik Revolution, in a hotel in Moscow. And there's the power of the book to take you right off the beach of the back porch and send you just wherever you'd like to go. This has been such a lovely hour of tiptoeing through your gardens of recommendations. I know we've just scratched the surface. We've got full listings from each of my guests at our website, top 10 from each, onpointradio.org. Check it out. Elizabeth Curry Chandler at Goodreads in San Francisco. It's so good of you to make the time today to talk with us here at On Point and all of our readers around the country. Thanks very much for joining us. Oh, Elizabeth is already gone. Janice,
I'm gone. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I did.
And Janet Geddes at Avid Bookshop in Athens, Georgia. Thanks for joining us, Janet.
Thank you so much.
Liesl Schillinger at the New York Times Book Review. It is always a pure pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us this summer.
The pleasure is mine.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.